Aid workers often win applause for their courage and selflessness, for leaving often comfortable lives to help out in wars, famines, and catastrophes. But in a recent post on his blog, Quinn Zimmerman, an aid worker in Haiti, gives us a different understanding of the experience. He vented his frustrations, including resentment from some Haitians, incessant begging, and the unwillingness or inability of people to help themselves. Of course, he adds, the need is real. The cause important. Much remains to be done. If you've been an aid worker, what challenges did you not expect? What surprised you? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Quinn Zimmerman is an aid worker in Léogâne, Haiti. His blog is called These New Boots, and he joins us from his home. Quinn, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And you wrote in your blog post, your empathy is there, but it's something different than it was before. So what's it become?
That's a good question. I think what it's become is more realistic. I think that's going to be one of the things that you're going to take away, committing yourself to a place that inherently is going to show you, once you have the time to take a look at it, what it's really like to work in a place that has consistently shown to be very difficult for people, both the people that live here and the people working here. I came down here with kind of rose-colored glasses and this belief that intention was enough, that my desire to want to help people was enough. And looking back on that now, I realize that wall, I think, is very normal for most people when they take a leap of faith into this kind of work, is also something that that eventually will be really challenged, if not altogether abandoned. So you can take a look at things more realistically, and hopefully, should you decide to commit yourself, be able to be more effective.
What was it that opened your eyes?
I think the combination for me was the realization that no matter how much I tried to help here, or I've tried to help here and continue to try to help here, there's no way that I can fix this place. I never would have assumed going in that I could fix it. I think that's actually quite an egotistical statement. I sometimes talk to people that tell me they're here to save Haiti, and I can't help but kind of, you know, laugh on the inside when I hear that, because I think it's incredibly short-sighted and again, egotistical. But at the same time, I did feel like I could really make some sort of a tangible difference. And I've learned that the only real way to keep yourself focused and going forward on this is to celebrate the smaller victories, because if you really look at Haiti or any very, very impoverished and difficult country, you can never hope to come in and somehow have the magic bullet that's going to fix it. So that was largely a very large wake-up call for me when you realize your own limitations. It's quite humbling, actually.
And there were specific experiences, though, that caused you to maybe start thinking again. You described walking past a group of young Haitian men who were just hanging around and the insults that they would throw at you.
Yeah, that was frustrating. It's something I've gotten used to, but after a while, it just starts to bubble up. It's not. I don't think it's uncalled for necessarily. I do have to call out ignorance where I see it, and I've definitely felt in situations that people were being quite ignorant and very aggressive. But at the same time, I can try to understand, one, that's not necessarily anything I've done, and I try not to take it personally, although that can be difficult. But Haiti historically is a country that's been under the thumb of other more powerful countries since it declared its independence. It was the first free black republic. It was the first successful slave rebellion, and as a result, they've had to deal with a lot of that. That doesn't justify 17-year-old, 18-year-old guys telling me to go, F myself, but I can understand the frustration. And more recently, I also think it has to do with the fact that change is slow here. I remember listening to This American Life episode after the earthquake happened, and they were talking about how Haiti's kind of a conundrum because more and more aid is coming in, more money's being poured in, there's more NGOs on the ground, and yet the country's getting worse. It's easy for me to say, well, surely there's some progress being made, but I have to take myself out of the equation and imagine what that must be like for people living here. They must get incredibly frustrated. They see all this money, all these NGO workers going around, you know, saying that they're helping, and yet they don't really see lots of tangible results. So, again, it's it's a mixed bag. I try to be understanding, but there's moments where I really have a hard time with it, and that's what I was writing about.
And some of that anger in their seeming inability or unwillingness to help themselves.
Yeah, that's incredibly frustrating. One of the things that I think is actually quite challenging here is there's a strange kind of 1-2 punch here of dependence and expectance at the same time. The amount of aid that's been poured in and the amount of time that it's been here has resulted largely in people just kind of assuming that their needs will be taken care of. Now, that's not everybody. I can't speak in generalities. I have quite a lot of patient friends and coworkers, and the majority of my staff is Haitian, and I have a massive amount of respect for a lot of people here. But I also meet a lot of people that just kind of sit on the street, hey, blanc, bam yon dollar, hey, blanc, bam sa. That means, hey, white person, give me a dollar. Hey, white person, give me this, give me that. And then when I ask them why, they tell me because that's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're obligated to do. If you're not going to do that, then leave because there's no reason for you to be here. That, I think, is incredibly short-sighted and also very frustrating because, again, it's this strange combination of being dependent but also expecting it. And that can be very disheartening because the reality is no aid project is going to work if you don't have people that you're trying to help bought into it and wanting to help themselves.
You also tell a story about a girl named Jenny, 18, whip smart, you describe her as, who knows you pretty well, who's been on the receiving end and who can't stop asking.
Yeah, she eventually, it comes up every now and again. Jenny and I, she's a good friend of mine, so we've gotten to the point now where we could tease each other, and she knows every now and again when she's overstepping my boundaries, I can give her a look and she'll laugh and back off. But yeah, you know, with Jenny, it was also a difficult situation because I've really gotten to really appreciate her and her family, and I've learned more about what it's like. I think, for me, again, one of the more humbling experiences is, for as frustrated as I get and my venting online, it's like, at the end of the day, I really have to, you know, check myself. Quinn, what are you talking about? You can buy an airplane ticket whenever you want and leave. Like, you have absolutely no right to really feel as if, like, this is something that you're allowed to bitch about. Again, it's humbling. But with Jenny, when I go out and I spend time with her family and I look at the realities of what it means to be really poor in this country, it's very difficult. And yeah, with Jenny, I'm lucky in the sense that we've established a relationship now where I am helping her. Actually, I also wrote in the article that again, little victories must be celebrated. And one of my little victories is I've decided to try to help Jenny on a very personal level, just get her through school because her mother can't afford to do that. And that keeps me grounded. It keeps me focused on the fact that even when I sometimes question the larger picture at play here, there is somebody that I'm helping and I've formed a really sweet relationship with. So that's helpful and certainly something that keeps me moving forward.
Quinn Zimmerman writes the blog These New Boots. He's an aid worker in Léogan, Haiti. We'd like to hear from other aid workers about the frustrations they've experienced in the job. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. We'll start with Tracy, who's on the line with us from Newark, Delaware.
Hi.
Hi.
I've done relief work both in Guatemala and in Bolivia with a group with the Methodist Church. And it was a medical mission trip, but at one time one of our translators was asked by some of the people we were helping where they found this person, the aliens from outer space.
Alien from outer space?
That's what they said about us. I guess because we were just so different, you know, I don't know, that we were so different. But and at the time, I just laughed it off. But after a while, it did hurt. But I understand, I feel it's so complex with people from the U.S. going to some of these countries where our government's been so involved, either, you know, overtly or covertly, and may be responsible for the predicament that some of these people live in. And I didn't know if they were bringing out their frustration in that way or if it was just a real simple, these women really look different, where are they from?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I enjoyed doing the work very much. I don't know, my life has changed quite a bit. I don't know if I'd have an opportunity if I'd do it again. But that was, you know, just also in Guatemala, one woman wanted to make sure, very sure, that we knew, being from North America, that they were poor and they were suffering. that it wasn't like some people I've heard here. Well, they're poor, but they're very happy. You know, they have their family, they have their community, but they're very happy. Well, this one woman that was, you know, in her 20s wanted us to make sure that we're poor. We know it, and we are suffering. It's not like we're the happy,
right,
poverty-stricken, you know. And so those were just two things that I took from it that maybe were a little bit different than I had anticipated I would.
Tracy, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
If I could make a comment on that, I think it's actually a very good point that she brings up.
Go ahead.
I actually would think that one of the things that we in the, I guess if you want to call it the first world or the West or whatever you want to call it, when we come down here, we assume that people in poverty must be suffering. And surely there's a lot of suffering, and I've seen it firsthand. But I also would have to say that the vast majority of the time, it looks like people kind of go about their daily lives. And you know, it's not as horrific as the scenes that you see sometimes in articles about Haiti, from people that have only been here for maybe a week in a post-disaster situation type of a thing. I think that actually one of the things that might get the most specifically to Haiti, the Haitians very frustrated, is this stigma that they get, like these poor, desperate people. They there's no way that they can help themselves. We have to go in and do something. That's so demeaning, and they're people just like anybody else. So just because you're poor doesn't mean you don't pick up on what other people perceive you to be. And I know a lot of Haitians who are very proud of being Haitian, are very proud of where they come from, and yeah, they might not have a lot, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're miserable and suffering constantly. And I think it's unfair to pigeonhole them into that. Not that I'm saying that the caller
mm-hmm.
did,
yeah.
But I also think that is certainly something that can start to build resentment over time. It's like, you know, you guys are just assuming I'm this thing that you need to come in here and fix. That goes back to my earlier point of coming in to try to save anything is, I think, incredibly demeaning to whoever the people that you're trying to, quote-unquote, save are.
Aid worker and blogger Quinn Zimmerman, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk with Alex. Alex with us from Las Vegas.
Hi. I worked with an NGO in Cote d'Ivoire in West Africa for almost a year, and I could really relate with your caller in how he himself changed and his outlook towards the work that he's doing changed. I noticed for me, I really became kind of hardened. You see so much poverty and so many bad things going on around you all the time that people's real problems and real struggles just become another sob story, and you become hardened. And I really hated that about myself. It almost felt like a racism that I felt like every Ivorian was like this, and that just wasn't true. So I guess the most surprising thing that happened to me was that my own personal change and how I changed and then had to kind of change back.
Has that happened to you, Quinn Zimmerman?
I understood part of that. The connection's a little hard to understand, but I think he was talking about the perceptions on what he saw and what he had to change back. I have to say, I have left Haiti for a period of 2 months, 3 months at the beginning of January 2011, and that was incredibly eye-opening to have to readjust and go from a place like this where, yeah, your skin gets hardened and you kind of put up these ways of navigating. One of the things that goes back to the first caller's point of the aliens, as they referred to her, one of the things that you have to get used to is you stick out like a sore thumb when you're doing aid work. You know, when I walk down the street, there's no way that I'm not going to attract attention, even though there's quite a lot of aid workers here. Leogon has tons of NGOs. It's just part of being a foreigner here, or a blanc, as they would call you. And, yeah, it took a while to shed that and then put that back on once I came back. So, yeah, I can totally understand the feeling of having to kind of try on new identities almost, if you want to call it that, or certainly new skins to try to deal with whatever given situation you find yourself in. And it's really apparent in an aid capacity.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Let's see if we get, this is Jean-Claude, I think, Jean-Claude from Jacksonville.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
I am a native from Haiti, and I can identify with a lot of the things that your guest is talking about. I've actually been to several medical missions to Haiti, and I find it to be consistent all across the country that a lot of my fellow Haitians, they are more interested in asking for a dollar instead of working for that dollar. I'm a psychotherapist by training, And I took the time to kind of talk to him about the idea of working for yourself and do things for yourself as well. And your guest also talked about the resentment. And I think that the resentment is twofold because of the historical context, our history with the French and history with the Americans as well. And also, after the earthquake, as you might know, the Haiti has become a big business for a lot of NGOs. So there's a lot of Haitians who's looking at the blanc, like people who are exploiting them. And I do understand that it's not all the NGOs that's doing it, but because of the large numbers of NGOs that's doing it, that lead to that type of resentment.
I think in your blog, Quinn Zimmerman, you refer to that as the white savior industrial complex.
Yes, indeed. Something I really didn't know too much about until I got here and then realized I kind of played right into, which is something I think about a lot when I'm here. But yeah, what he was saying is very true. It's this idea, again, of I read that first in an article by Teju Cole, who's a writer, and following the Kony video, he posted up stuff on Twitter and said that the white savior supports brutal policies in the morning, founds charities in the afternoon, and you know, receives awards in the evening. I think that might be a little bit too harsh. I certainly don't intend to try to support any brutal policies, but I certainly think that there is of a level of like, yeah, we're just going to come in here and we're going to fix this, and don't worry, we know what's up, and we're going to do things. And the reality is, if you don't take the time to really learn about the people and let them take the lead on helping themselves, maybe you can provide some resources that are hard to get in developing countries and some expertise that might be hard to find. But you really can't come in on your high horse and tell them this is how it's going to be done. It just doesn't work, and it's going to breed an incredible amount of resentment. I completely understand what he's talking about.
Quinn Zimmerman, thanks very much for your time today. Quinn Zimmerman with us from Laogan, Haiti. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.